The following is an at-will presentation.
Angels and gods and aliens, please help me. I pray for myself and pray for my family and friends and lovers and strangers and enemies. Shine light down on them and me so I can properly see me. I pray in the name of love, just be, not this, not that, beyond definition, me.
Hey guys, so we're going to start this week's episode a little bit different. I'm going to give you 2 full minutes of some ambient noise. Our guest today's name is Rain Dove, and as I was sitting down trying to think of something to lay down for the intro, I thought, why not this? Why don't we give 2 minutes for some meditation pre-episode? Rarely throughout our day do we ever just sit and breathe. So in these 2 minutes, you're going to hear sounds of rain, sounds of doves. P.S. My last name means turtle dove, so there's like a lot of synchronicity happening in all of this. And just breathe. Take deep breaths. Breathe in for 3, out for 3, and set an intention for your day. I love you guys.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Rain Dove. Yo, so we have puppies in the room. We are going to have some puppy noises throughout this track and get into it.
Some puppy love. And my my partner actually works three doors down from here.
Three doors down.
Yeah.
That's a band.
It is a band.
You have a partner.
I do.
I didn't realize that.
Yes. Their name is Sierra Jimenez.
Sierra Jimenez.
I know. They're
That's a
producer
great name.
At Elite Daily.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
How long have y'all been together?
Can we, chill? You there? Oh, cute one. We've been together for about 2 years now.
Okay.
Yeah. But a lot of the things that you read about us online, that it's always talking about, we've just recently gotten into a monogamous dynamic.
So, yes. Polyamorous to monogamous situation.
Stuff and things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Stuff, things, and stuff. Mm. How does that work exactly?
Well, I was in a time period in my life where I had come out of a series of monogamous dynamics, and I had grown up in a culture that was extremely puritanical and taught me that monogamy was the way, the only way. And
I don't know what you're talking about. That like sounds really strange.
I know that it's like a very uncommon way of thinking, but there are people out there, a small select group, which represents like 60-some-odd% of the population that believes people are meant to be together. Only 2 at a time. And I was part of that cult. But then I went through a period in my life where I realized it was really unhealthy because I was finding myself in these situations where I go on dates with people and I felt like if I went on a first date, I had to go there with the intention of this may be the person I'm going to be with for the rest of my life,
right,
for always and all times.
Yeah.
So I decided that I would try openly dating people, and I used a lot of very open communication. It was super healthy. It was great, and I was able to discover what I really was seeking in a partner, the kind of qualities that I was, you know, really looking for. And then when I found somebody who really had all those qualities, I decided to really focus on that partner. And if I ever wanted to reopen my life sexually, I would be able to be honest with them and be communicative and say, hey, I know that we're in a monogamous dynamic, but I want to explore these sexual needs, and we would chat about it.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long have you been monogamous now?
For about a year.
Okay, so it's been a good year split.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, half and half.
So is there still room in the relationship for emotional polyamory? Can you still get really close to somebody else without having sex with them?
I mean, I get really close with all my friends.
People, yeah.
I mean, I really connect on all the levels,
right,
I think.
Right,
it's important to me to be wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I dive straight in. And sometimes it makes my partner very uncomfortable. You know? They'll say things like, you know, they feel that I'm flirting. You know, if I say something that's too sweet or too kind, or they'll feel very uncomfortable, you know, if, like, I extend myself too much. Like, say they were moving and I was like, here, I'll help you for free.
Hmm.
I'm not trying to, like, sleep around or start another relationship in
right,
that kind
you're
of way.
A nice
build
person.
A life with them. Yeah. Well, you know. No, but I think I'm just the kind of person that, like, when I take the time to invest, you know, in people, I'm 100% full throttle, all in, 100%.
Let me ask you a question. Did you hit on other people in front of them in the first year?
I was very careful about keeping my dynamic separate from my other dynamics.
Okay.
I was very communicative about, like, who I was with when I was with people, if they
right.
wanted to know, and I left that acquisition of knowledge up to them. If they wanted it, I would be honest. And if they wanted to meet a particular partner, I would talk with the other partner, and if that partner was open, that would be great. And there was a time, it was a great time where I had, like, dinner with five different people and went home with one of them at the end of the night, and nobody was jealous. Nobody sent, if they were, they definitely kept it to themselves,
right.
and nobody sent me weird passive-aggressive messages. or anything like that. I was able to be openly affectionate in front of everybody. They all knew what was happening, and everybody was a part of it, and it wasn't seen as, like, this awful thing, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a step back here. I feel like we could keep talking about relationships
We could keep going forever.
But let's start with who you are. Rain Dove.
Rain fucking Dove.
Rain fucking Dove. Rain on them doves. You know my last name means turtle dove?
Really?
In Italian?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I kept on having a hard time saying your last name. I kept on saying Tortola.
Tortorella.
Tortella. Tortorella.
Phonetically perfectly spelled out. Tortorella.
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 My full name has the same number of syllables as supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Stop it right now.
Yes.
Give it to me.
Rain Dove Danielle Victoria Rupert Dubaleski.
Rupert Dubaleski.
Rupert Dubaleski.
Rupert Dubaleski.
Yeah. Let me just stick with Rain or Rain Dove, though.
Rain Dove.
Yeah.
How are all of those names real?
I know, right? Man. Well, Rain Dove is my Native American name.
Okay.
Given to me, you know, at birth. And then you have to go on your spirit journey. My family has an Abenaki. My mom's side is Abenaki and French. My dad's side is all the people who raped the Abenaki and the French, you know, and all the...
What is Abenaki?
Abenaki is a Native American tribe.
Okay.
So...
From?
Oh, they're from the Northeast Kingdom area of the U.S.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's Rain Dove. That's your Native American name. My mom's name is Dawn of the Flower, so that's a very common thing.
Dawn of the Flower.
I know. It's amazing.
That
I love
so
my mom.
Amazing.
I love their name. Danielle is my Christian given name because there was... And Adam is, you know, they're very adamant parents that are like, we must make sure that we have our stamp just in case,
right,
you
right,
know.
Right.
They need to have a passport to get into heaven. And then Victoria was the name of the nurse that delivered me.
Huh.
Rupert is my father's last name. And my great-grandfather, who is Jewish, Holocaust survivor, before he was passing away, on their side of the family, it was all, you know, it was all like female quote. There's quotes whenever I say a gender thing. you know, they're all females. And so they were afraid that their name wouldn't live on. So right before they passed, I took on their last name.
Wow.
So then now I'm Rupert Dubaleski.
Rupert Dubaleski.
Yeah.
It has a nice roll to it.
It's great until you have to do, like, when you're in high school, you have to do, like, your SATs or fill out anything with the bubble letters.
Yeah.
Then it's just a waste of paper.
So what did your driver's license say? Or your state ID or whatever you have.
My my passport says Rain Dove V. Dubleski.
Okay.
They just kind of left a few of them out of there because they couldn't fit
straight
at all.
Ellis Island shit. They were just like, yeah, we're going to cut like three quarters of this off.
I know. And Rain Dove is like, it's so hard to get a job with a name like Rain Dove because everyone always thinks that you're like some pot smoking hippie, which
right.
I think you can still do a job pretty well and be a pot smoking hippie.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
You know, that definitely comes with a certain kind of connotation to
it. Yeah. Well, I mean, I asked you within the first couple days of meeting you, I was like, oh, so how long have you been going by Rain Dove?
Yeah.
You were like, that's just my name.
I know. A lot of people think it's my chosen name. And in a way, it was. I grew up with the name Danielle is the name that I used because my parents were concerned that I'd get picked on in school. And the teachers were concerned, too, because I already was kind of tall and gangly and just awkward already. Mm. And they're like, Rain Dove is not going to help them get along with the children. But then everyone called me Tranny Danny and just made it better. You know?
Tranny Danny.
For 3 years, I got my hair cut in third grade. I had lice, and they shaved all my hair off, right? Because my parents couldn't afford a lice kit. And when I went to school, I had these big muscles and no tits and, like, just, like, a very shapeless kind of tall, lanky body. And everyone knew that my name was Danielle, so they all called me Tranny Danny. But I thought that was someone who's into trains because I didn't grow up with television or pop culture.
I mean, how did they even come up with the name Tranny Danny?
I mean, television is something that a lot of people still have access to. So,
but this is what year?
This was, gosh, it was a while back.
90s? We're
talking in the 90s,
yeah.
Late 90s.
I mean, that,
yeah.
I mean,
like 98, 97?
Tranny wasn't like a word that was really in the zeitgeist.
Still was a word, yeah,
wow.
Absolutely.
Huh.
I mean, the idea of transvestites, transsexuals. I mean,
yeah.
Tranny used to mean more like a transvestite, I think, than transgender.
Right.
But
it was kind of like the umbrella term for everything.
Yeah. Anything that would be considered trans,
right.
For sure.
For anyone that doesn't know who you are and what you represent in the world, you want to just give me like a rundown here?
Sure.
So we can continue the conversation
absolutely.
So people aren't like confused.
Yeah. Name is Rain Dove. I am a human being.
Sometimes? All the time?
It depends on how scientific you want to get.
Yeah.
If you break me down into particles, I guess it could be something else, future worm food, future, organ in a jar, I'm sure.
Yes.
People harvest some shit from this body when I'm gone, if there's enough left. I currently am a model, activist, and actor, which is pretty exciting.
I've been using the word actorvist.
I love that.
Isn't
that's
that
amazing.
So good?
Activist.
Yeah, activist.
But doesn't that kind of feel like you have an obligation to every image that you put out there? So when you're acting, you have to make sure that every film that you're in is not just like a masturbatable pleasure.
It's somewhat, it doesn't have to be perfectly in line with the message,
yeah.
but it has to be somewhat in the bubble. Like I got an audition, I don't know, a few months ago that was like a young Mike Pence. And I was like, fuck you. That is absolutely not happening.
Amazing.
I will never audition for that role. Like, sorry.
I mean, unless they were trying to do some kind of like video to Mike Pence where you could watch and be like, it's himself talking to himself and being like, you should change your life.
Right. That's not at all what it
you
was.
You don't want to be a politician. You want to be a rock star. Move on.
That's like the funnier die version of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I mean,
it's flattering though. I mean, Mike Pence is a human being is probably not necessarily the most savory character right now, but definitely.
It wasn't like a biopic of Mike Pence. They used the name Mike Pence as a reference for what this guy would be like. It was like Republican, like stomp fucking dick, really.
So what if somebody asked you to play a Nazi in a film, right? A Nazi role. But the film was like about, the film featured like, a Jewish hero or a person who is a minority who is the hero of the film. And they were overcoming them and they just wanted you to portray the bad guy in general.
I don't know that I need to play the bad guy right now. I think that there are a ton of other people that would love that job and don't believe in the things that I do.
Yeah.
And they should have that job. You know, I've been like really, really picky on the stuff that I even put myself out there for at this point. Personally, I'm like more in line with the stuff that I'm doing outside of other people's projects and outside of, the shiny, beautiful Hollywood industry.
Yeah.
I just think that like
glitter.
I have a different responsibility at this point. And that's okay. I'm in a position where I can like take that stance.
Yeah.
Very luckily in that position. Like I realize the privilege that I have in this industry, and I think that I have to do something with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great privilege to be able to be picky. You know, I think that unfortunately a lot of mistakes that people make as they're coming into the industry, any kind of media industry, is that they take what they can get because they feel like it's the only thing that they'll ever get. And a lot of people don't really realize the value in, like, you know, filtering and saying, you know, if this came, then more will come.
And taking your time.
Absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It's such a difficult industry to break into, but, like, it's one of those things. I don't know. I always knew as a little kid that this is what I was going to be doing. There was never – I never had a plan B. It was like I just was – this was it.
It was very clear. You wanted to be – it was very clear that you wanted to be an actor or very clear that you wanted to be an activist?
Oh, an actor first. When I was a little kid, I thought my activist world was going to be more in food and diet. I was like –
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I was vegan for most of middle school, and then I was a raw foodist for 3 years. Like, I have lists – I've never talked about this on here. I have lists from when I was like 10 years old of like – all of these things that I was going to do in Hollywood to build the platform to be able to, like, break into the diet industry.
Wow. And so you were, like, really passionate about this, and, like, you really believe that if people change the way they consume food, they could change the world.
Yeah, totally.
Amazing.
But I'm on this kick now. You know, I used to say, and everybody says all the time, like, you are what you eat, you are what you eat, you are what you eat, right?
Absolutely.
That's a thing. But, like, I don't know that that's totally true anymore. I think that you are what you believe and you are what you think. And if you can, if you eat a fucking hot dog, like, we all know a hot dog's bad for you, right? Like, on a scientific level, a hot dog is bad for you. But if you're looking at this hot dog and you are like, this is going to sound so hippy dippy, but if you, like, send love to this hot dog and realize that, like, you're going to enjoy the experience and, like, know it's going to go through and it's going to pass and everything's going to be fine, like, I don't think the hot dog's that bad for you anymore.
I think that's a very interesting way of thinking about it. I mean, our bodies are, they are mechanical machines.
They're machines, yeah.
And as a machine, you know, a lot of the lubricants in that machine are chemicals.
Right.
And, you know, the chemicals are definitely, they can be triggered by these synapses, you know, these electrical synapses in your brain, and that, that your brain is powered by the you that's you, that's beyond your body. So I definitely believe that you can have a better digestive, you know, experience if you do if change the way that you think.
Right.
I mean, will it make a hot dog really still very good for you? Probably not. But will the effects of the hot dog or the things that you take in possibly change? Absolutely. Will your body maybe digest it better and figure out what to, you know, shit out and what to keep better?
Right.
Probably. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think you see it all the time. And I actually got a really interesting article the other day about there was an experiment done about people. And there was half the people who they were asked, do you have any toxic people in your life? And half the people said, there are people I don't like to be around, but no, like, really toxic people. And then the other half, they said, do you have any toxic people in your life? And those people were like, yes, absolutely, totally toxic people. I know them. I know them as toxic people. And yeah, I try to keep them out of my life, right? When they did these studies, they found out that the people who did not recognize the toxic people in their life and said, oh, yeah, these people are just bother me, they tend to keep those people in their life. It means that these people aren't healthy, but they keep them around. And so they keep this toxicity in them. And they actually were 70% more likely to die of some kind of illness, illness-related thing instead of just general degeneration.
Interesting.
This study has happened for a little bit over a century. It's been really interesting. And the other half tend to live longer lives or die from just, like, freak accidents and things like that.
Really
But they were healthier because they could recognize what was toxic and what wasn't.
Right. Well, do you have toxic people in your life?
I definitely know that I can recognize somebody when they're toxic, but I am not immune to keeping around people who are unhealthy because I am a gambler. And I love to gamble. I think that every moment is a moment where somebody can change. And I think that everyone is on their own journey. So their journey is going to shift and change. And I haven't always been the best person, you know? I definitely am not the same person I was, and I wish that I would have given myself a chance back then. So, but it doesn't always go in your favor, you know?
Back when?
Back when I wasn't the best person, you know. I think, like, sometimes when we're not great people, we take other people down with us, you know? But sometimes we also just need consistent people who know boundaries, you know, who are consistent in our lives, don't hold our faults against us, but also know how to have boundaries and say, you're not a healthy person for me right now.
Yeah.
But they're open to you re-entering into their lives. I feel like isolation can really help us martyr ourselves, and it becomes more difficult to pull ourselves out of our depression because we feel like the hero of our own story, or we feel like it's impossible. Like, nobody believes in me. Why should I believe in myself?
Right.
You know, and then we go full Jafar, you know.
I want to know more about this bad person that you were.
Oh. Well, no, it was just, I went through a period of time where I was homeless, and that was pretty wonderful. But it definitely causes you not to be as much of a, you know, healthy, you know, functioning society.
Right.
I didn't, like, resort to, like, hard drugs and prostitution.
How old were you?
But I went through a couple periods. I went through a period when I was, like, 23 to 24, and then went through another period when I was 25 to 26.
Mm. How old are you now?
I'm 27.
27? Yeah. Recently?
Yeah. Yeah, the first portion of my dynamic with my partner, actually, I was, like, couch surfing and doing my thing, and it definitely wasn't the healthiest.
Wow.
Healthy situation. And then when I was out in Berkeley, California, I was sleeping in my vehicle. And then one day somebody thought there was a dead body in the back of the vehicle. So they reported it. And it's illegal for you to sleep in your car in California.
Yeah.
So the police knocked on the window. They scared me. I scared them. Everybody was scared. And I got out of the vehicle by their demands, and they towed my car. And the cost of the towing was $500, which as a homeless person, you can't afford. So I lost my home overnight. And then I resorted to sleeping in people's backyards. And, you know, you put little saran wrap over the sprinklers. And, you know, you go to, like, you go to restaurants and you wait for people to be done eating. And then you swipe whatever's, like, uneaten off from their plate.
Like, from outside tables?
Yeah, outside tables. Or inside tables, too. You can pretend to use the restroom.
Oh, you just walk in and go in?
Yeah. Or when you go in to use the restroom, you can also just, like, take a whole roll of toilet paper so you have it for the future to, like, do whatever you need to do with it.
Wow.
And I just definitely was more of an Aladdin, you know. I definitely I had my my share of shoplifting and things like that, you know, as a young kid.
Mm. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Vermont, you know. I didn't really do any of that stuff during that time period, but I know that definitely when I was, like, going through my more transient phase, I definitely wasn't a positive contributor to society or myself.
No, I hear you.
You know?
I didn't expect that story.
Yeah.
At all. But I'm happy you shared it.
Yeah. I'm pretty open and candid about it. I haven't really talked about it in detail like that before, but I think that it's really interesting how easy it is to become homeless and to fall into that state.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hardest thing isn't the being homeless. It's the being lonely because you feel like you are so gross, you're a part of the street dust, and you could scream and fall on the ground and beg for help, and no one would help you. People would just walk by, you know, and they couldn't be bothered. And then the people who are bothered are just over concerned and very fetishizing of your plight, and they provide these temporary solutions. And the real solution is in your own mind, but you just feel like maybe the world isn't real, maybe things don't exist. There becomes a point where you just feel very out of body. You don't really feel like a person anymore. You don't really count time anymore. And it's easy to fall into that, like, vortex and just fall away from everything.
Yeah. So how'd you get out of it?
Well, as the famous story goes, you know, I was sleeping on these pieces of cardboard in the back of a house that had been foreclosed. And I was doing, I would go to people, my dad always told me that if you have two hands, or at least a good head, you can go, which is a little ableism. I apologize if that's offensive to anyone, but that's what he used to say. And he'd say, if you have two hands, you can go to work. Mm. And he always used to tell me, if you can't find anything, then just go door to door and ask people to work. So I would go to people's houses door to door and knock and ask people for, I'd be like, hey, I noticed that your lawn needs to be mowed, or I noticed your bushes need to be trimmed, or whatever. And I'd just pick up some cash that way. And I took a friend out to drinks, and they were having a hard time, ironic. And I was having a shit time, too, a little bit. And they told me that they were like, you know, you really should change your life. You're a really good-looking person. Maybe you should consider modeling.
Hmm.
They're like, you just have the bone structure for it. I'm like, well, this is because I'm homeless and I haven't eaten in a while. <You know? laughs> I don't mean to guilt trip you, but that's, you know, I just had, like, the natural installment. And, of course, I lost the bet over this football game. And I had to go to a casting call of their choice, which sounded like the worst punishment you could ever go through. I'd never wanted to do it. It sounded awful. I dragged my feet the whole entire time to this Calvin Klein casting in San Francisco. And when I showed up, they told me I was there on the wrong day. And I looked around, and I've never really known anything about the fashion industry. Really not interested. Never studied it. Don't know anything. I knew that Calvin Klein was like some kind of like brand you see in like Goodwill and stuff like that on men's shirts. And so I looked around and I was like, oh, they must do it by hair color, because all the people there were like blonde, and there was one redhead, and I was like, that makes sense. You don't want anything to clash with the clothing.
Oh my
that
god,
makes
you
sense.
Are so funny.
I was like, that makes sense. So they tell me to come back the next day. I come back the next day, and of course, it's a bunch of men, or as society calls them, men, you know? And I realized, oh, I'm at a men's casting. But I'd been mistaken as a male before, so I was like, all right, whatever.
I don't know what the right way to say this is, but you are born female, correct?
Yeah, I mean, society would deem I'm female. I got this, like, vagina situation going on, some ovaries, got some cool chemicals flowing around.
Yeah, you got some boobs.
Yeah, those didn't happen when I was born. They came in later. But they were still, you know, I do look I do look like quite the voluptuous baby, to be fair. I was pretty, you know, these things came in, and I was so ashamed of them in elementary school at first, because I was like, oh my God, they're so big, and running was so hard.
Okay, back to Calvin Klein.
Yeah. So, I go through this casting, and they cast me, and I show up. It's a men's show on the day of the show, and they hand me a pair of underwear. I'm getting my hair and makeup done. They're like, let's go. We have 20 minutes. We have to do the walkthrough. Let's go. Let's go. I'm like, all right. So I was like, I'm just waiting for my outfit. Like, where do I go for that? And they're like, that is your outfit. And I look, and I have this pair of underwear, and I realize I'm in a men's underwear show. And I'm like,
You got booked.
I got booked.
Immediately, and then the show was happening.
And then the show was happening literally like less than a week later.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so I have like this pair of underwear, day of the show.
Shut the fuck
20 minutes
up.
Before we have to go out. And I'm like, okay. And I knew I had two options. I could say, one, excuse me, there are some things in my body that I think might not align with the particular marketing scheme you have for this garment. Thank you so much for your time. Here I go, and I'm out, right?
So wait a second. They didn't ask to see your body in the original casting?
No. First of all, typical, showed up a little bit late. That was a classic rain dove at the time.
You're a late one.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I'm better. I'm a lot better now, but I had quite the reputation of being nefariously late.
Okay.
You know, and when I say nefariously late, I mean I wasn't late because like the subway blew up or anything. That's terrible to say, that the subway broke down. But, you know, I was always late because like I decided to like watch South Park a little bit longer or something you know, know you're supposed to leave, but I have to finish this episode.
Interesting.
I was terrible. Terrible at the time. Mm. Yeah, so, and I knew that the second option I had with this person was to say, like, fuck it, and just go out there and make my friend just as embarrassed and just as, like, awkward as I had felt when I went in. Because I thought what I was doing was terrible. I was like, this is awful. These pretentious, capitalistic, motherfucker, narcissistic assholes. Look at them. They think they're so great. They're setting unrealistic beauty standards for people. They think they're so awesome. Like, I really had it out for the fashion industry. I hated it. I just thought it was so shitty.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go for the second one. And we walked through a run through, and I waited in the dressing room till the last minute. And then they're like, rain. And I come running out, and I'm not wearing anything except for underwear. No
white
bra,
Calvin
anything.
Klein tidy whities.
Tidy whities, exactly.
Yes.
And I walk out, and I got these double D's, like, that's them swinging side to side for people can't see
God.
It. And the casting director was like, no. You could just see the casting director's face. No. And we're in San Francisco, home of the queer. So it's very, very tricky situation for them.
Right.
I think they're trying to figure out if I was trans, if I was just androgynous, if I had like maybe growths. They couldn't tell. They didn't know what was happening. So the casting director comes up to me literally 5 minutes before the show, and they're like, this is your first time modeling? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, I could never tell. And I was like, oh, thanks. And they're like, well, unlike these other amateurs, I think that you could wear more clothing, because you could just work it. You could just work that clothing. And the way that they said it was kind of like models have to start naked and then work their way up. But I had graduated a level, you know, to clothing.
Fuck that bullshit.
And I knew what they were saying. They knew what they were saying.
Yeah.
But I needed to honor the bet. You know, I do honor bets. If I lose a bet, I will honor it. Because
you're a gambler.
I'm a gambler.
In all sense of the word?
Yeah.
You gamble money all the time, too?
No, I don't gamble money.
Okay.
Although I will say I did do a little sports betting last year because I knew that the Cleveland Browns were going to have a bad season. Sorry, Browns fans. I made so much money off of that, too.
Is that a football reference there?
Yes, yes, it's a football reference.
I think you may be the first person to ever make any sort of sports reference on this show.
It's great. I mean, the Browns fans, I felt so bad. They had so much hope for their team. They're like, this time we're going to win. And I'm like, I'll take that bet. And they never did.
Wow.
Suckers.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. But I felt bad about that.
So how long ago was this, the Calvin Klein?
Calvin Klein was a few years ago, 3 years ago.
And it's kind of been a different life ever since, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, at first I didn't, I did the show and then they paid me $250 not to attend the after show because it was a Calvin Klein charity show.
Wait, they paid you not to attend?
Because they were like, we don't want to upset our charitable donors, conservative people. And I was so broke at the time, I was like, thanks, $250. I earned that in like a week, maybe.
Wait, was there like a vocal response when you walked out? Was there like a...
No, absolutely not.
No.
I mean, everybody was packing up to leave and go to the thing. And people just thought I didn't show up.
No, I'm saying during the show when you walked out topless.
No one knew. So then later on, a little like this shitty blog article that like went out that was like, one of these dicks is actually a chick was the headline of that. Yeah. And then people were interested in me, you know,
right.
So they started reaching out. The winner of Project Runway reached out and was like, Rain, I want to give you this opportunity to model for me. I just won Project Runway. Would you like the opportunity to wear one of my dresses in my lookbook? And I was like, that sounds terrible. Like, I literally on the phone, I was like, no, that sounds really bad. I'm sorry. That's really not my thing. That sounds just bad. Just no. And the person has had it out for me ever since. But everybody asked me to work for free. And as most models, when they're growing, they'll take all the free work
right,
and
yeah,
build their book.
Right, yeah, of course. Yeah, you have to. I mean, that's how it works. Yeah,
you have to.
But you didn't have that option.
I didn't want to. I mean, it sounded like terrible. I mean, it doesn't sound fun to like prance around in front of a camera and pretend you're like so cool and fake these moments.
Yeah, and like play sex over and over and over again.
Yeah. And trying to make yourself masturbatable.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure.
There's a weird relationship that you need to have with the photographers too. Like when I started off, like we were encouraged to like get the photographer. Not to try and sleep with you, but to want to sleep with you immediately.
Oh, my God.
Especially as a boy. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I have to tell you, though. I mean, when we dive into, obviously, I end up coming to New York City, and we'll get to that point. But we should definitely talk about sexpectations.
Yeah.
Because men in the industry are far more abused, and I think, in certain ways, than women are.
Yeah.
Because the protections are not in place, and there is this sexpectation that men can take care of themselves.
Right, yeah.
And that men like sex.
Uh-huh.
So male models tend to be far more sexually abused or, you know, intruded upon.
Well, male sexual abuse across the board outside of the industry is just so much less talked about than female sexual abuse, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, I just played one of the Menendez brothers, and, like, that entire case was dropped because the judge said that sexual abuse had to be between a man and a woman. It couldn't be between two men.
What?
And that was in, like, 89, 90.
That's crazy.
Dropped, and they're still in prison.
That's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that blows my mind. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that sexual abuse and the sexualization of women doesn't exist. And, you know, all the gender things I say have quotes because I don't really like putting those in terms. But because society does, let's humor people here. But it definitely does exist. We do sexualize women a lot more. I mean, you look at the Billabong campaign of this year. It's like the men's sports thing is a person like doing some cool like jet skiing thing. And the women's thing is like this woman on a bikini, like in a bikini on the beach, you know, in the sun. It's a sports brand. You're like, what sport is she playing? Like, man, does she a catcher? She catches suns like rays?
She's catching something.
What is she doing? Catching my eye. No, see, and the advertisement works. There's just so much that goes on behind the scenes.
Can we take a second here and give me your overall on gender? Because we keep talking about whenever you say gender, you put it in quotes.
Yes.
Can we just give me the rain dove explanation of gender?
Yes. Once upon a time, there was a rain dove who believes... Well, okay. So my view on gender is that gender is the matrix. Mm. I don't believe that gender is a scientific thing. I do believe that it is a social thing and therefore a social science, but it is not something that's specific and it's not something that's solid. It's constantly morphing and changing and shifting because gender is the affiliation or relationship to a particular energy or set of mannerisms or trends or cultural norms.
Right.
And those things shift over time.
Mm.
To be a gender is like to be, to be he or she, and it's also to be like feminine, feminine or masculine.
Mm.
People always get them confused with like sex and gender. You know, they're always saying like, you know, sex and gender. Like, why can't you just be what you were born as? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And the thing is that sex is determined by four. People argue maybe even five various like traits, you know,
right.
And it's about like, you know, these phenotypical traits, you know, everything from like the chemical makeup, chemical and hormonal makeup to like your internal and external genitalia.
To chromosomes.
Yeah. So there are two very different things. One is basically like the machine and one is how the machine functions and what the machine likes.
Yeah. Which is the receptors and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's so for me, like. I believe that that we should definitely understand our machines. We should have a relationship to the machines.
And none of these things are tested for the most part, when you're born, right? Like, it's not like...
Right. I mean, if they feel like something's a little off, they'll give you, like, a chromosomal test. Or if they feel like something's a little bit off, they might, you know, do some kind of, like, scan where, you know, you drink that yellow liquid and they look at your internal organs to see if they match with your external organs.
Right.
But for the most part,
they're just
they just look at the little nib or the or the nub and they just say, okay, it's a boy or it's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to argue...
And it's, like, the size of the penis, too, right? If the doctor thinks it's able to penetrate a vagina, it's big enough to penetrate a vagina, boy. If not, they'll figure something out.
They're like, we'll figure it out as we go along.
Right.
Some people actually are definitely missexed at birth because, you know, their genitalia isn't expressive enough. And then they have to come back and be like, okay, second try.
Right.
But what I believe is that not that we should be born as male or female. Like, when you're born, little baby Nico, it shouldn't be like, it's a boy. You know, it should be, it's a you.
It's a you.
You know, it's a Nico. It is this person. And... what that would allow you to do is not to be trapped into the expectation of what a he or she is.
Right.
So you wouldn't understand your body in terms of being comparative to the rest of your species or a side of your species. You would be taught about your body in comparative like senses of like you as you and the functions of your body. So they it's like being like, all right, you have these specific hormonal levels. You have these specific like, you know, sets of genitalia. You have these this specific wiring. And that would allow you to have a better understanding of yourself as a person.
Your machine. And how it reacts.
Exactly.
Yes.
You'd be able to have a healthier diet because you would understand your blood type and how to eat for your blood type and the type of chemicals in your body and how they react to the food that you eat and how you should be consuming those particular types of things. Things that are more acidic or things that have more carbs, et cetera. You'd be able to have better mental health because you'd understand like the hormonal makeup of your body. So you'd be able to understand not that you're an angry guy or a pussy dude, you know, and I say that as a joking derogatory term.
We got more quotes here.
You know, a lot of quotes here, But
and what you're genetically disposed to, you know?
Yeah. And you would be able to understand like how you function. So you'd be able to tailor your response to people based on your understanding of yourself, not your understanding of how society works.
Right.
It would just be so much better for us. And the problem is that gender and sex, I mean, we divided society based off from sex first, and then we created gender as a secondary way to be able to tell about more about people as we wore more clothing. And when we created sex, like as a division, we did that because the human species lived to be anywhere from 20 to 30 years.
Right.
I mean, it was pretty shitty for the human race. I mean, it really sucked. And then we created this system so that we could understand how to better create a population that grew faster and faster and faster. It was an efficiency machine.
Yeah.
But now that machine has been so efficient that it has procreated to a capacity that is massively beyond our ability to, like, you know, provide for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we no longer need a system that makes more people, but now we need to redesign this system to be a system that feeds, shelters, waters, and physically protects the people we've already created because we haven't been able to do that.
Right.
Which means, like, taking away those restrictions, stopping the division of people based off of their sex or gender, and making it more about division of intent, division of purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that goes way past sex and gender. It's, I mean, race, religion, creed, you know, it's like...
Absolutely. I'd say drop everything and just say, what is your intention with the human species? Right. Sure. What is your intention with life? And, you know, as long as you're not going to get in the way of other people's acquisition of food, shelter, water, physical safety, and the ability to freely move about this planet, that's how you get judged. You get judged on your intention and your application of that intention.
Let me ask you, what is your intention for this life?
My intention for this life is to help people develop a better system so they can acquire food, shelter, water, physical safety, and the freedom of movement on this planet.
Yeah.
It's hard because I think a lot of people make fun of me. First of all, my name Rain Dove doesn't help, but I have what we consider to be very utopic views on the planet.
Right.
I think that it's totally feasible for, by the end of my life, everyone to have reasonable access to water, for everyone to have reasonable access to food and shelter. But it's going to take some communication. People just say that that's not within my lifetime, but I thoroughly believe that it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, depends on how long we live. You know what I mean?
I know. I mean, this may be the only moment we've ever been. Yeah.
With the fucking landscape that we're living in right now, who knows?
It's just a dream. We're going to wake up at any second.
It's all just a dream.
We've never been. We never will be. We are only right now.
We just are.
And now, and now, and now. God, we're going to get lost in that matrix.
I feel like I need to ask you about this because I've never had this conversation on here, but I didn't know that you were Native Two-Spirit.
Yeah.
You want to talk to me about it some?
I mean, the thing is that I'm one of those, like, people that has a bright white skin, and the amount of blood that runs through my veins that actually is Native is pretty minuscule.
Okay.
So I don't get to really fly under that flag. Copy. However, I did get to grow up with a lot of the cultural practices and understanding of that later on in my, like, between the ages of, like, 10 to... And
so still
beyond.
Pretty young.
Yeah. But before I was like, when I was like 10 and younger, I had a lot more Christian, schooling and things like that. So I didn't really get to tap into it until I was ready to go on my...
Your vision quest.
Yeah, your vision quest. Some people call it vision quest. Some people call it your like spirit journey.
Right. And you did that at 10?
I didn't do that at 10.
Oh, no.
I was introduced to the idea that was coming. That was when I was started. That was like, do you want to go on this? You need to understand how to tap into this. You need to tap into your culture. I went on that when I was, I just turned 13. So a lot of people do it at 12.
What does that look like? Where do you go?
You go on this like guided meditation first to kind of cleanse your mind and understand how to focus on things that really stick out to you. And then you go and you stay in the woods for about a week on your own by yourself at 13. And a lot of people would see that as like abuse, but it's not. I knew how to do a lot of things that, we consider to be like hardcore survival, but they're not really, you know, light a fire, feed yourself, build a shelter. They're really basic things.
Not only hardcore survival, but like hardcore masculine, right?
Yeah.
Quotes
societally.
Here.
Yeah. I mean, the Abenaki tribe, there's definitely a couple of different factions of it that have like moderately a little bit different beliefs from each other. But I came from a place that was really female dominated.
Nice.
The leader of this tribe was Whispering Wind, and she was absolutely incredible. My journey was like really interesting because I had like a two-part journey, actually. Most people, they'll only have one spirit animal. Some people will have multiple. I had two, both predator and prey. I was hoping for something really cool, by the way. I was like, mine's going to be like an eagle soaring on the back of a wolf, and then like a tiger's going to come out, and like they're all going to be just charging to war together. Like that's what I was kind of thinking was going to happen.
Yes.
But my first experience was actually a rabbit. My very first day on my spirit journey, while I was out in the woods, I came across a dead rabbit. And now when an animal dies in front of you or you discover them to be dead, that is the most powerful message you could possibly get.
Whoa. I didn't realize that.
And rabbits are about like focusing and being able to be like clever and to be able to be smart. A rabbit, when it gets chased by its prey, especially a snowshoe hare, will run in a circle so that it goes back on its own scent. And it will do that 3 or 4 times. So the predator will chase it in a circle double up on its scent, and then the rabbit will take a 20 to 30 foot leap off the trail, like massive, huge, maybe not 20, 30, like 10 feet. Okay. 10 foot leap off from the trail and far away. And then the predator will keep going in circles thinking it's still hunting this, you know, rabbit. They're very smart. And I had a really intense dream about it that night, and it just really settled with me. And I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be my spirit animal. And then like a couple days later into it, I had all these like cat tracks around my sleeping area. It was really unnerving, that, you know, right by the water. And I had this really intense dream about a bobcat. Then my final night, I had this dream about like two sides of the river, and there was like this rabbit staring at this bobcat, and I was like literally on my back floating in the middle of like the two of them, just kind of letting the water take me. And I went right through them, and you could feel this intensity of the bobcat wanting to kill its prey on the other side, but the water kept it divided. And then the, you know, the prey wanted to run, but it thought it was still blending in with the background. I don't know if you've ever seen like a snowshoe hare, but they turn white to blend it with the snow and then brown. But then in the fall, there's this weird time where they turn white prematurely. They prematurely turn white. It's really cute. And then you'll like see them in the woods and they're frozen and they're like, I'm invisible. I am hidden. And they're just like, you could literally almost walk up to them and touch them because they think you can't see them.
Because they think they're frozen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's my, I've never really talked about that either. That was a really intense journey for me. And then I'm obviously a Libra. So also
I'm a Libra
the
rising.
Scales. Really? You're Libra rising? Yeah. Virgo rising.
Nice. Moon?
Aquarius.
Aquarius. My moon's in Aquarius too.
Really? Yeah. Amazing.
Sun's in Leo.
Whew, man, that's awesome.
And
that's amazing. Leos are incredible, powerful, awesome, all consuming beings.
Straight up, I have a spirit guide that is named Bobcat Carl.
No.
I got a bobcat on my totem hard.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
What a small world.
I know.
Or maybe just a very
and
linear
my
dimension.
My last name means turtle dove, and your name is rain dove?
Rain dove.
Yeah, we're supposed to find each other in this life.
That's incredible. That's like so many layers.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
You have a small canine. I have a small canine. you have leg hair. I have leg hair.
Yeah.
I know. So it's like
we're at a movie together.
What? We made eye contact with each other.
Yes.
More than twice. Intentionally.
Yes.
You know how many times you like talk to somebody on set and they're like, oh, yeah, we're totally going to hang out. We're going to do something. And then, you know, you get all jazzed up because you're like, oh, I've got a new friend. And then they never contact you. It's a very New York thing.
I
find that like genuine connection is like a New York City is a city that never sleeps and people are just walking around like sleepless zombies, you know.
Yeah.
So I was really grateful to run into you because it's rare to find somebody who's really genuine. When they say they're going to do something, they do it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't even a question. You actually came into my life before physically you did.
Really?
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly what the circumstance was, but I don't know who it was, but somebody sent me your Instagram handle and was like, you need to have them on the podcast. You need to have them on the podcast. And this was probably 6 months ago plus. And like it was in the back of my mind, and the second Linda started talking about you, I was like, oh shit, that's them.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Amazing. Well, you know, I got the script for Fluidity, and I said, they said, look at it and just tell us what character you like.
Yeah.
And I was like, the only character I want to play here is Matt.
Is Matt, yeah.
That's the only one. And they're like, oh, that's sorry, funny. We gave it to Nico. And I was like, who is this Nico?
I wanted to play Lily.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. They were like, how about a more feminine character? And I was like, sure, it is acting. It is acting. We do act.
Well, that's what we are. We become
professional
other
pretending.
Yes.
Indeed. you know, but I was like, I then had to go on like a moderate stalk of you just to figure out who is this person?
Right.
And are they up for the job? If anyone's going to take a job for me, they better be fucking good, so I'm not insulted. It's the worst thing when somebody who is not, like, you know, up for the task gets the job over you and you want it so bad.
Yeah.
And then I looked up your stuff and I was really impressed. I saw your Paper Mag interview.
Thanks.
The
one that just came out recently? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you were talking about your own dynamic and your own relationship. And
there were some pieces of that missing. You know,
it's hard, right?
I mean, I'm sure you've seen this firsthand, but it's so hard to tell, to do an interview with somebody And, right, they have full control over what they're going to write. And they put it all in their own words. Even when they transcribe exactly what you said, it can still be out of context, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you don't get the tone in the pen on paper, right?
Yeah.
So tone completely changes. And I don't know. I've always had an issue with it. And, like, I realized really quickly, like, if any of this conversation was going to exist at all, mm-hmm. like, I was going to be the one leading it, hence this podcast, right?
Yeah. I mean, one key thing that I do is whenever I get a big interview, like, I just really did one for Vogue Italia, which is my first Vogue Italia interview. So I'm super stoked. Comes out in September.
What up? Awesome.
But whenever I do a big interview and I know it's going to hit a large number of people, I refuse to do it in person. I refuse to do it on the phone. I write my answers down and I ask for final approval. Because a lot of things have gone wrong because people have snipped out sentences or mixed up facts.
Right,
you have something and it's so good, but you need that whole goddamn paragraph in there. And they won't take it. It can get a little... It can get a little like,
and a lot of people won't give that to you. Like, that's like last looks on an interview.
Yeah,
that, like, Madonna barely even gets that shit.
It depends on who you talk to, but you need to tell them, like, look, you don't understand. You're not talking to a model. You're talking to a movement.
Right.
And I need to make sure that everything that I'm doing is respectful of my party. And I know that this sounds like a really big thing, and I promise it won't make your life difficult. But I just need to make sure that we're being accurate, because if I fail, this movement fails. Mm. And that's like a really important
thing. You really believe
that? I believe that everybody is their own movement. That's their thing. They're here. They're doing their thing. You know, everybody's their own movement. And I know very much what my movement's about. Some people spend their whole life trying to figure out what it is, and then they realize that their movement was just a personal journey. So it depends. It depends on who you are. But one thing that people always get wrong is, like, in the very beginning, BuzzFeed published an article about me, and they said I was a wilderness firefighter, in which I was a wilderness firefighter. Mm. That's the truth. That was my job title. Mm. But they don't allow me to really elaborate on it. Mm. But when people hear it, they're like, you are so brave. Mm-hmm. You know, they think of me, like, going out into the middle of the fire with these giant hoses and, like, spraying down the flames and, like, walking out like a Dell, you know, set fire to a ring. But I was actually, I was not that kind of firefighter. I actually was, you know, my job was to take a chainsaw and cut down debris and things like that. So when a fire's coming, you know, you make what's called a fire break, which is like all the trees come down and, like, you know, you make it so that it's a low burn point and you're protecting watershed resources and things like that. Was I in did I experience blazes? Oh, abso-fucking-lutely. But, like, maybe 15, 16, 17, you know, blazes over an 11-month time period. The rest of them were just, like, controlled burns, things like that. But everyone always has, like, this fetishized version. And people have, like, drawn art of me, like, coming out of the sky, like, parachuting out over, like, the flames, like, so badass. And I always felt so bad because there are so many people that are really doing that. And I don't mean to, like, take the credit for it or anything. But journalists, they just are like, we're not going to be like, you are a chainsaw wielding wilderness fire prevention person. They're like, we're just going to call you a wilderness firefighter. Yeah. You know? And I hate it because I just wish it could be a little bit more accurate. But sometimes they only have a certain number of words, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the person that's most annoyed with that is you. And the person that's, like, most annoyed when I see something that's not right in the article is me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, it's not, like, it's probably not working up other people that are reading it.
Well, some people are. Like, I just have, my TED Talk just came out online, and somebody commented on, thank you, and somebody commented on it, they were never a firefighter. They're a liar, right?
Oh, really?
And, of course, you should never let these comments get to you.
Right.
But if it's something you're already on your own ass about, you're like, they know. you know? And you're like, how do I fix this? It's just really
We'll fix it right now. I just did.
There you go. The truth is out.
The truth is real.
I mean, you know, I was gross. We stayed in the woods for 3 weeks at a time. We lived out of tents. And, you know, we cut down, like, dead stuff and tried to save the wilderness, you know? I mean, for you, I mean, when you came out of high school, right, you, like, what happened? Like, did you say, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to, like, I'm going to go straight into my life, like, I know my, because it sounds like you were really passionate at a young age, you know?
Yeah, really young
Did
age.
You say, I need to, like, get on this now, or, I mean, what happened?
Okay, so senior year in high school, I stopped acting the second half of my senior year, and we had this thing at my school called senior project where you could take off of school if you had some sort of project that you were working on. Most people, like, go.
That's amazing.
And, like, work in a business somewhere or intern or, you know, do something. I had this genius idea. I was a big stoner at this point in my life. I was like, I'm going to build this 12-foot by 12-foot mural. in my garage on a giant wall that folded in half, and I'm going to bring it to school at the end of my project and display it for everyone to see.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And this piece was called Free Will, and I had done little bits and pieces of art. Like, I never took any real art classes or anything. I just, like, I had this inside of me. I don't know. And it was this Vitruvian man of sorts, giant. I mean, 12 feet by 12 feet. We're talking huge scale.
Wow.
And there was this big fence in front of him, and half the side was this, like, urban cityscape, and half the side was this naturescape, and it was like between the two worlds and trying to break out and trying
to
figure
deep.
Out, yeah, who
I was.
I
basically just hear it, feel it.
Free will. God. I mean, yes.
They don't get us.
and so it was a great success. The most interesting part of that story, my parents got divorced when I was like 4, and I had a close relationship with my dad, not super close, mm-hmm. but I hadn't seen him like a lot in my high school years. But he worked public works for the neighborhood that my high school was in.
Amazing.
And I called him because they didn't know what to do with this fucking mural at the end of this presentation. They were like, what are we going to do with this? And I was like, yo, Dad, will you come to work and help me destroy it? Come to school and help me destroy it. And he came, and it was like the first time I had seen him in a long time.
Wow.
And like him and I and some fucking sledgehammers, like, we freed Will. We like let him go.
That's incredible.
My dad, who I hadn't seen, so it was just like, that was the lesson in it all.
Wow. And how did he feel like when he first saw it? Did he think that the mural was really good? Or was he like, let's get this out of sight before people know that you made this?
No, definitely not the latter. My dad is married to, what's the word for somebody that makes pottery?
Ceramicist.
yeah,
whatever, I know what you're talking about.
It's not a pottist.
It's
a potterist. A thrower. Yeah,
a
sure.
Thrower. Yeah,
one of those things.
One of those things.
Yeah, he's very much so in the world of art. And he goes to fairs and trade shows every weekend and sells the stuff. He doesn't really like it's like, oh yeah, this is cool. And they go like, I love it. Good to see you. I love you. I love you. I love you. But we just fucking destroyed it. I don't know. I haven't really thought about this since that happened, to be honest with you.
Wow.
So I quit acting at this point in my life. And I was like, I'm going to art school. And I went to art school in Chicago for 6 months or for a full year. I was like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. I fell into architecture and sustainable development. And I had this whole like plan that I wanted to buy all of these historic landmarks all over the United States, make them green, turn them over, and like build all these communes all over the country. and so I transferred to business school in Los Angeles, Loyola Marymount University. My plan was I was going to get a business degree and then go to USC to get a master's in construction and development.
Wow. And how were your grades in school? I mean, were you a good student or were you
I didn't fucking care about school at all, but I was like good. Like I got like a 31 on my ACTs, but I never even studied. Like
amazing.
Or no, I didn't get a 31. I got a 29. That's not
too bad. I was going to say that's amazing. Yeah, but
but I mean, like I did well, but like I got a D in English senior year, like because I just didn't fucking care. Like I didn't, like I thought it was so petty all of this shit that they were trying to teach me. That being said, I wish looking back, I would have actually paid a lot more attention because I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. And I was like kind of an asshole to some teachers. And I apologize to them if any of you are listening. And I'm actually thinking about going back to school now, to be honest with you.
That's amazing.
But no, I mean, it was definitely this grandiose idea of school that I had never really had before. And it was all like, I'm one of those people that will start thinking about something and it'll be like, poof, explosion. Like, I'm going to think about the
really
biggest
excited,
thing I could
like,
possibly do.
Bam.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I got to L.A., and I was like, oh, I'm here. Like, this is how I was going to get here to do this.
Yeah.
I'm an actor. I'm in L.A. now. Let's become an actor.
So when did that happen? What year was that?
That was 2000. It was 10 years ago.
Wow. So a decade.
2008, yeah.
Wow.
And so I moved to L.A. I was 19. I was living two blocks from the beach. I had, like, long, fucking, curly, badly culturally appropriated white boy like loose dreads, and I was working at a raw food restaurant while going to fucking business law classes at a Jesuit university.
Wow.
Loyola Marymount. And I was like, yo, this isn't for me. Like, I gotta stop. I dropped out immediately and walked into Ford Models the day that I dropped out of school, and they offered me 2 years on the spot, and I was like, okay, I'm good.
That's amazing. Ford is a great, I mean, I'm not sure where they stand now, but they were really good.
Yeah.
agency, and they just invested in you and were like, let's make this happen?
I mean, kind of. You know how modeling agencies are. Yeah. They're like, yeah, we're going to do this and this and this and this. And I'm like, I was always an actor before I was a model. I always wanted to be a model. I love shooting. I love the relationship between a photographer and, you know, the talent or whatever. I just love the camera. I love what you can capture. It was never about, like, you know, being a Saint Laurent model or anything. I just liked the art of photography.
Yeah.
So I never really was like a real model, but the second I decided in my life that I was going to go back into the industry, it all started happening.
That's amazing.
I did my first TV show 3 months into that.
What was your first TV show?
It was a pilot for Nickelodeon called Norton Avenue All-Stars.
You do have a very Nickelodeon face.
I have Disney face. This is a Disney nose.
I don't know. I feel like it's more Nickelodeon.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, Disney's cool. Disney does a lot of awesome stuff. Not going to knock Disney. But,
you know, Disney, it just came out that Disney is the most culturally and sexually diverse network on television right now.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So beautiful,
if
right?
only they would have a queer... princess/royalty. I mean, Pixar or DreamWorks? It might have been DreamWorks. Just really did the... No, it was somebody who did a knockoff of a Pixar-style short film with, you know, gay love.
Oh, yeah,
two boys.
The heart, yeah.
Oh, so cute.
Oh, my God, so fucking cute.
Disney will go there one day. They will go there one day. I know it. It's going to happen
I have a meeting on Thursday. I just started doing a bunch of voiceover work for Nickelodeon.
That's incredible.
And I just pitched this whole idea about the show... like breaking down gender stereotypes for them.
That's awesome.
So we shall see.
Hopefully that happens. Yeah, so you do voiceover work sometimes.
Yeah, I just started.
Do you have like a specialty, like a voice that's like, you're like, I have this voice and it's unique from my own voice and I want to see something happen with this?
Well, I don't like have a special voice, no, but actually, I just did my first cartoon episode last week. I'm playing this dog named George and I got a good bark. That wasn't good. And these people were like fucking so happy about it. So I'm going back in and meeting with them.
Your dog just barked back.
My dog just barked back.
When I was a kid, I used to have this like high-pitched voice, and then Stitch came out, and I was super suspicious that somebody stole my voice. I was like, oh my gosh, how did they know? Someone must have said something. I couldn't believe.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating.
I was like, I annoyed my grandparents on end with this, like, very, like, hello, how are you?
Yes!
You
know,
like that very, like,
that was so good.
That, like, thing. And the minute that I heard Stitch go, you know, blue punch bagel, you know, I was like, oh my God, somebody stole my voice. Somebody took my voice. I was so distraught. Because you ever think that you invent something and you're like, I came up with this idea, and then you see it start
happens,
get marketing and you're like, okay, who's responsible? Where's my cut? Yeah. You know, where's my money? Where's my cocaine? Like, you don't get anything out of it. And meanwhile, some schmuck gets rich and they probably overheard you doing something on a subway or something like that and took it. Ugh, it's
you have
so
a couple more of these inventions up your sleeve?
I do.
Sure,
I have
sure.
tons of inventions. I'm actually thinking about creating this website for people who are like...
Do you want to say this on the air right now?
Yeah. No, this is not an invention. I'm like actually legitimately thinking of having this like... it's like Common Ground, but for, you know, they have it for like, we can have free music and people who play music or whatever can just throw their stuff up there and people can use it for free.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, there should be a website for people who have just ideas and they feel like they're probably never going to execute it because I got a lot of other shit going on, but they're like, this is a good idea and it should go out. And people can like purchase their ideas.
Ah, interesting.
And then if their idea takes off, the person legally gets X
cut.
Percentage.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like a Shark Tank online.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, in order to be like a person to receive the idea, you have to like have whatever paperwork. This, like, if you view this and your name's affiliated with creating the product,
right.
Blah blah. But I think
interesting.
I think it'd be great because it would help us expedite the innovative process,
right.
And then also give people the opportunity to make money without having to leave their homes. Because I know people have great ideas, like especially like farmers and shit. They have these great ideas for machines and stuff because they work in agriculture, and yeah, they're never gonna like
they just don't have the money and resources
them.
To make them. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's like, but if they could put the idea out there, then maybe like, you know, Ford or Tesla can go on there and be like, oh, this is a great idea,
genius.
And they could buy it,
yeah.
Give them a percentage.
I've always thought of a website that links big companies that aren't necessarily running on environmental green ideals with environmental companies that have all of these ideas and resources available to them, and they can just like find each other, right? I don't feel like that exists anywhere.
That should exist. The hard thing about like and the environmental element is that it can be more expensive to produce things in a green way.
Yeah.
So
if, but not if it's mass produced.
No,
honestly.
I absolutely agree.
That's
yeah.
The problem.
It's not being mass produced. Yeah.
And
so you get much people on board.
Chemicals are more expensive than natural alternatives. Like no matter what, we've just mass produced all of these chemicals for so long that they are inherently cheaper now at this point.
No, that's absolutely true. And I think the hard thing is that as we have more sustainable resources, like for instance, as we have more sustainable energy, it's going to be more difficult for the energy, you know, for the world of energy to be able to capitalize on the everyday usage. Mm. I mean, it's hard, you know, with solar energy. I think that's really a big future for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the products to make solar do come from the earth, and we will have to rape part of the earth in order to create solar energy. But it would be far less destructive than fossil fuels.
Did you read about this wave energy that they just came up with?
Talk to me about the wave energy.
It's like this giant, like, donut-looking thing. Within the next 10 years or something, one of these things in the ocean can power a third of the United States.
What?
Yeah, I was just reading it this morning.
Okay, is that, like, a big fluff, like...
like a futurist idea?
Or is this, like, are they real? Or are they being like, it's the next gold rush, step right up, man? Like,
well, I mean,
did it have, like, a GoFundMe at the bottom of it?
No.
Okay, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the resources to make a better future, but unfortunately people
we're
are
not in
shore.
Control, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, these resources have been here for a long time.
The we are in that control, we're just divided.
Well, the people that make all of the giant decisions, right, and buy out all of these smaller fucking companies are the top, you know, fossil fuel people in the world. Like, they buy these companies and then just kill the ideas. That's what happens.
Right. But they still can't keep people from going on the land and doing a job themselves.
Well, it's getting a lot better now, yes, of course. And I think social media plays a huge part in all of this.
Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing is like a lot of this also goes for diversity, too, in like clothing. So like I always joke that whenever I'm in a campaign, it's never just like, here's Rain. They look really cool in this clothing. Next person, that person looks really cool in the clothing. It's always like, and I'm not just like a person in clothing. It's always like, video or some kind of like social media thing like that. Sarah McLachlan music plays in the arms of an angel as happened with that whole entire like animal rescue video that they did in a while back. And as Sarah McLachlan music plays, it's like, hi, my name is Rain Dove. Society thinks I'm really ugly and my self-esteem should be low. But when I use Dove soap, things aren't as bad as they normally are.
Yeah.
Use Dove soap, because even though I'm really fucking ugly, Dove soap gets me. Dove soap respects me. And because of that, I respect myself. It's always like some weird, sad, like, you start off with I was once fucking ugly, but now
I'm beautiful.
I'm beautiful. And the thing is that I really think that, you know, I've done a lot of meetings. I'm a big activist in trying to get people to change the way that they think about themselves and others, so that way they can be more focused on what they have to offer the world rather than like focusing on what everybody else has to offer the world, you know, focusing on themselves as an individual, being more of a selfless generation than a selfie generation, but also being able to take care of themselves in the way they need to. And the problem is that a lot of these CEOs, they aren't really like racist assholes. Even if they're white cisgender men, you know, it doesn't mean that they're a racist asshole who wants to make sure that the rest of the world is only represented as white, size 2, able-bodied, 24-year-old, 6-foot-tall model. You know, they're not necessarily wanting to do that. They just want to make money. They want to, you know, pay their employees, expand their business, and pay their rent. And with social media, we have the opportunity and the ability to show them that we will put our money where our mouth is.
Right.
You know, we have the ability to say, like, it will pay for you to market to us. Whereas in the past, like, this has always worked and we're going to stick with this.
Right.
There's no motivation for them to change the way they market things unless, like, I know a lot of people say, you know, they have a social obligation to represent people fairly and equally. But unfortunately, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, they have the right to market their brand as they want to.
However they want.
And it's our, we put so much pressure on them. Like, it's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like, Like, yeah, you're the one who's fucking things up. But the real responsibility comes down to the consumer as well. Like, it's our job to put our money where our fucking mouth is. Mm. If we want, like, someone like Gap to market to people that are different than what they've marketed to before, and you want to see different people in their campaigns, we have to show them we are buying from Gap. We will buy from Gap.
If you do this.
If you do this. Yeah. And when they do a campaign that falls within our interests, we go to Gap and we say, we have put our money where our mouth is. Mm. Otherwise, why market if you're not going to get results? And the same thing with energy companies. You have to say, look, what you're going to do is a trust fall. And we know that by investing in clean energy, it means that your profit is going to change. Mm. But we promise we will compensate for it. You will still make money. You will still be able to do the things you want to do, expand as a business, et cetera. But, like, we got you. Because what we're asking these CEOs to do is take a giant fucking ass trust fall off of a 30-foot cliff into the unknown. Right. And we have to say, we the consumer have, we've got you.
We got
Otherwise,
you.
Why would they ever come off that cliff?
Oh my God, genius. Yo, you're going to do some incredible, not that you already haven't, but like, you're going to run some shit in this lifetime.
Friend, thanks.
No, straight up. I'm going to do a little read for a second.
Go.
I feel like you could go one of two ways. I feel like you could either go down a political lane and be ahead of a major company of some sort, or be like an advisor to numerous big companies, but be this like really respected voice to a bunch of people on like a political level, or you're going to go off the grid. And you're going to go build it all with the people.
Well, that's a good assessment, actually. I mean, right now, I'm finally getting, this taken a while, but I'm finally getting my first, like, really good-sized paychecks, and I'm looking at getting a nice piece of property in Montana, to hide from, you know, everybody. And I'm like, I'm going to build a yurt out there, and then I'm going to make that location public knowledge. And if people torch it, that's the will of the people. And if the people want to build it up, that's the will of the people, yo. Like, that's my thought. But
why Montana?
Well, Montana, because it's $400 an acre right now. Watershed resources are able to be owned by the people, and they're very rare and need to be protected, and a lot of private vested interest in purchasing those. A lot of companies that are going in and purchasing, like Nestle. Not that Nestle's evil, but definitely they don't really have the best intentions in mind all the time for watershed resources. So my goal would be to like protect, I would go out there, see if I can find a piece of land with an aquifer, and then park myself right on top of that fucking aquifer and own all the surrounding land. But my goal, I really want to be, I mean, acting is what I want to do. It's where I want to be. Modeling took off on its own. I didn't ask for this. It's great. Well, I'm so grateful for the journey. I'm not saying that I ever want to like change it, but if I could like, I really love how George Clooney or Angelina Jolie have taken they've been able to be an actor and fulfill their artistic endeavors and produce things and direct things, but also act in things. But then they're also just doing so much
philanthropically. Yes.
Philanthropically, and I think also politically, like they're trusted advisors. They go into these rooms, they talk to these CEOs.
Right.
They're able to go in and just say, "Hey, look, George Clooney, dashing smile, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what I see, you know, happening in your company," and they can be the voice of the people. And I mean, that's where I really hope to do. I mean, I hope to get to a place where my platform is strong enough. Hard thing is, as a model, people just don't think you're smart. Well, so it's a really
crushing
difficult
that,
thing to
obviously,
go.
Obviously, very, very quickly. You're not a stereotypical model or really anything, let's be honest. Like, you're breaking fucking boundaries and breaking walls. And, like, thank God we have somebody like you that is doing this in the world right now. Like,
thanks,
I am
friend.
In awe of
says
your
the
voice.
Activist.
Well, you know what? Like, I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying here. Why do you want to be an actor? Let's talk about this.
Well, ever since I was, like, conscious, like, I know that, like, my journey in life and a big part of how I'm going to be able to affect change is by being able to bring stories to life and being able to like bring perspectives to life, you know, being able to bridge gaps. And one of the great things about film, and I never had TV growing up. I only got to see it on the holidays. And when I did, it was this magical world where conversations could happen in safe spaces where people get to walk home at the end of the day. The actors get to go home at the end of the day and they can have these intense conversations that we never have in our daily lives, but we get to see them in our living room. We get to leave countries in our living room. We get to like, you know, travel travel to like other dimensions and see like and feel things from other people without ever having to like risk anything, you know, like watching like actors is such an incredible like opportunity to like just be and expand, you know. And I just was like, that's where I want to be. Like, I just feel like I feel so much all the time. I have like ADD and like my brain is just everywhere all at the same time. Like, I'm in this room, I'm talking to you, but I'm also like, I'm looking at the spacing on, you know, on all these like screws, and I'm like, okay, this one was put in like, you know, not enough, or like this one, you know, and I'm also like, why are those like tacks there, and then the boards, and then I'm also like thinking about how much did it cost to do all the soundproofing, how effective is it, and I'm talking to you, and I'm also looking at this candle and thinking about how long it's gonna burn. My brain is like a super buff hamster running on a wheel very quickly.
Yeah.
And I just like.
Do you take anything for it?
No, that's my brain, and it's beautiful, yeah, and it's how it works, and it, sometimes it's hard for other people to handle because I talk really fast or I interrupt myself. I stutter sometimes when I get really excited, but that's just how my brain works, and it doesn't need to function differently. And, you know, I've smoked weed before a few times, and, you know, sometimes that's a really nice way to chill, but I don't medicate. I just don't think it's for me, but for some people, that's a really important part of them, and I respect it. But acting... when I act, I just like when I can take on a character, I just really feel everything like all at the same time. I can't explain it. Like,
I think you're doing a pretty good job. Yeah. Are you saying that you allow yourself to feel everything all at the same time?
Yeah, it's like a very free space to
do that in your waking life.
In my waking life, I do feel everything all the time, but I don't always act on it.
Right.
And I don't always assess it. Like, I have to push out all the little thoughts that are happening in my brain right now to focus on this conversation. Whereas, like, when you're acting, you get to do this giant, incredible, like, thought free flow, like, fall, like Alice in Wonderland down this, like, tunnel and just see what sticks and just, like, see, like, you get to rebuild yourself. You know, it's a way to, like, rebuild yourself in so many different ways and see different sides of yourself that maybe you didn't see before, or to see things in yourself that you never got to see. And it's this great journey of, like, self-exploration while also being able to tell a story. I don't know. I'm absolutely in love with it, but I didn't get into the acting scene until this year. This is my first year.
Yo.
Because I wanted to take classes and shit. I went to audition for Billions, and I didn't take the classes. I didn't take care of myself. I thought I was the shit. I was like, yeah, I know this shit, you know? And I walked in, and I wasn't terrible, but I wasn't good. And the casting director never called me back again. And Asia Kate Dillon got the role.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. Totally deserving. And I realized I need to, like... I need to know my shit before I walk in. So I took a shit ton of classes, did a bunch of schooling, just like pounded the pavement. And now I'm at a space where I'm like, I'm fucking ready, yo, bring it on. I'm putting it out into the universe. I'm ready for this shit. I love modeling, but I am ready to take it to the next level if I can, you know.
Yo, and I think acting is like the obvious next level, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta say, I think that you are so much more than what being an actor offers. And I think the longer that I've spent in this industry and the stuff that we're making for fiction is not always about the story, right?
Right.
It's about the machine and how it works. And it's about the man getting paid and all of these different things. And until you're making like your own projects and like writing your own roles and all of those things, that's still like a beautiful thing. But I think the secret in this conversation is this idea of like being able to fall completely. Like, I'm just thinking about the words that you said. And it's about tapping into that in your own self all the time, every single day.
Yeah.
And I see you working a lot in the nonfiction space, actually. Like, not necessarily playing these fictional characters, but playing different versions of yourself for the world to, like, really consume it.
That's a really interesting, like, vision. I mean, I definitely agree, like... I definitely agree, like, fiction is, you can't wait for someone to discover you. You have to discover yourself.
Yeah.
That is such an important part of your growth. Like, even in this, even in modeling, like, things didn't really take off. Like, my first year with an agency was shit.
Right.
You know, I didn't make any money. I didn't do anything. But I started creating my own
narrative,
my own content, my own thing. And, you know, with like a lot of luck and some things, it blew up. And so when I look at like creating, when I look at like, I'm like, okay, acting, I know I'm not a conventional looking individual. I know that like the story I could tell is not necessarily typically conventional. But you know, my goal isn't necessarily to be the star of all the films.
Yeah.
My goal is like to tell the story. So that means, you know, these are multiple facets, which is great for somebody whose brain works on a lot of different levels. But I love doing the research, and I love doing the writing, and I love like putting it out to people who are talented, who can bring it together. So like right now, I just really finished up this show that we are bringing out into our, you know, our pitches in about 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
Fingers crossed for it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a very like, it's a very like political fictional show. And right now, I just you saw me coming in today, and I was like out of it because it was about like, I mean, I spent all day talking to people from like the Riot Girl period out in Oregon. Seattle, Washington.
Seattle.
And their perspective, and like, sorry, so some of them live in Oregon right now, so they've changed their location. But they like their perspective is really interesting, and like we're like, you know, creating this kind of like show, not based on that, but taking some of these elements from this thing and like moving forward. And I think like, look, the machine is not, it's changing a little bit.
Oh, a lot of it, for sure.
And there's definitely room for me in it. Just
100,000%
Totally excited.
Not even a question. There's room.
But
there's so much room for
I think instead of like, I mean, there will be some people who will just discover you and who will say, I want to work with you. But I think it's really important that our community like comes together and says, let's make stuff by us for us.
For us, yeah.
And let's find a platform that we can work with. Don't like, let's not demonize like, you know, a Netflix or whatever and say, oh, they're the evil empire.
Yeah.
You have to say, look, we have a whole community that will consume your content. You will make money off from us. We need a platform to show it to lots of people.
Right.
Let's work together.
Yeah, and look,
yeah,
people are making good stuff all over the place. I'm not saying like everyone, you know, is like out for the money, out for the paycheck.
Yeah.
Like obviously there's a bunch of really great content that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're just living in a time where there's just so much content everywhere. You know what I mean?
It's super saturated
right
now. And it's like, and the hard thing is like advertisers are freaking out.
Well, it's changing. You know what I mean?
The machine is changing.
Yeah, it's totally changing. And the game of advertising is changing.
Social media is a big influence on that. You see, I mean, even look at what's happening on runway shows right now. If you don't have 50,000 followers or more, you will you're not going to sign by an agency. You're not going to be auditioned for runway shows. If you don't have 100,000 or more, you're not going to get into these big campaigns. They want social media following. I mean, the past three you know, campaigns I've done have all asked for social media numbers, and they are casting specifically was like, you must have more than 100,000. Because then they can say, we have 10 people in our thing, 100,000 each, that's 1 million people that are guaranteed
to see
advertising.
And that's
hard. It changes the art, you know. It changes the art of things.
Because I mean, nobody wants to find that discovery anymore. You know what I mean? Like nobody wants to build a talent from the ground up anymore.
It's a lot of risk for people right now.
Yeah, I mean, the narrative needs to already be written in one way or another, or somebody's going to come on and just write your own narrative for you completely, and that's like the worst possible thing that can happen.
Yeah, that's hard though. I mean, I think that the world will change because we're constantly going through these conservative, then liberal, then conservative, then liberal waves.
Right.
And I think right now we're all about like everybody's full exposure, and we're out there, and we're looking at these images, and everything's so saturated. And then I think the people who haven't been out there more will become that intrigue, and there will be money and information. You know, there's going to be money and information. So if you haven't shared your information, it's going to be valuable to people. And, you know, that may end up shifting the whole entire, like, okay, we can build a career off from the fact that you're unknown. And we will sell your information.
Right.
We will sell your story. And we will sell you out to the, you know, to the world in little bits and pieces. And people will be excited to learn about you because you've never been seen before, you know? We'll value mystery. And then eventually we'll be like, why are these people being mysterious?
Yeah, totally.
Like, these people are probably terrorists. They're probably assholes, you know?
It's kind of like that hare running a circle.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's exactly it.
We just need to jump out every once in a while.
Yeah.
That's where Montana comes into play.
Dang. I mean, I just feel like if anything happens and it's not, you know, if acting doesn't become my sustainable resource, I just want to have a platform that's big enough to talk about these things. I feel like my job is to talk and tell stories, but just like to be like, you know, share this concept of like, you know, like all the things we've been talking about with like neutrality and understanding that like I am I. Like when somebody's like, what are you? I am I. And like understanding, you know, not demonizing CEOs and CEOs not demonizing their consumer.
Right.
I mean, we need a mediation space. And I feel like that's my job. My job is to be just like I was on that river, just floating down the middle and being like, let's be logical here. You know, let's chat here. I'm not meant to be the face of this movement. I'm just meant to be like the string between two tin cans and the enemies are each sitting in a treehouse, you know? That's kind of like I think that's my future.
That was so beautiful. 5 things you love most in this world. 5 things. I've never asked this question on this before, but
5 things I love the most in this world. I love fire. I love the ability to like start fire and stare at fire and be around fire. The smell of the fire is like really important to me. I know this is going to sound so gross, but I love drinking out of rivers that are so clean. You know, you're not even afraid. You just stick your head right in and just like drink. And it's something I used to do as a kid. You know, I'd be doing like chores and I just like drink out of the water. The same water I'd go and get water for my animals, you know, I would drink out of it too. And it's such an amazing thing to put your face down on the water and there's a bunch of like, you know, the water gliders, those little insects.
Yeah.
And they just part the way for you and it's just really beautiful. I love music. I love when humans and animals and creatures, when we utter sounds that have no purpose other than to utter them. It doesn't always have to be music, but sometimes we do things just to do things. And sometimes you see a bird singing and it's not even a mating call. There's like no other birds around. They're just doing it because it feels right. And you're just like, what a cool little bird. And then people as well, like they're just like, I think singing is one of the most human things that we do. It's just a really incredible thing. I know this one's going to probably sound really bizarre too, but I love it when people are really proud of their accomplishments and those accomplishments are not conventionally something to be proud of. I love settling into a story about somebody, you know, they'll talk about their day and how they, you know, they were at maybe a mechanic shop or maybe they're like a cashier and you can just like, you can just see these people, they're just really good at what they do and they love what they do and that is something that they're super proud of. And I think maybe the best word for that is just when people are satiated, and they're satiated in their skill set and they're satiated in their relationship to their lifestyle.
One more.
One last thing. I really love the dimension that I am in right before I wake up. It's a time in which you realize that you go other places when you're sleeping. And you're coming back from these travels and you know you're coming into this dimension and you're choosing to come back. You're choosing to be here right now. You're choosing this moment to exist right now. And when you right before you go to sleep, it's the same feeling. You're free falling once again, letting go into a world that you don't know if you're ever going to come back from. Like you just close your eyes and trust that whatever's going to happen, it's going to be okay. And you don't know how much control you have over that dimension. You don't know if the scariest shit's going to happen to you. You don't know if something's going to happen in your house. You don't know if something's going to happen to you. You don't know if you'll ever get up again. And you don't know if maybe this was the dream and you're about to go into a dimension in which you'll actually wake up. You risk losing so much.
So you dream every night.
By sleeping. I do dream every night. I think there's rare times where I've slept and I haven't had a dream. But those times usually are because I've slept for a short period of time and didn't get to REM, you know? But I love that feeling of like trusting. And if you ever have an existential crisis, which has happened to me in the past before, you can have a hard time falling asleep because you're like, you're so grateful for the moment that you have right now and the feeling that you have right now. You're grateful for feeling sad or mad or happy. You're just grateful to feel it all. And then you're like, I have a pretty good thing going on right here. And I have to trust that I'm going to just lay back and disconnect from everything. And it's going to be okay. And when I come back, everything is going to be just as I left it. And that's so much trust. It's so much trust. It's absolutely incredible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was such a beautiful answer to that question. I knew it was going to be good. That's why I had to ask it. Do you love yourself?
Yes.
What is that?
I love myself in the sense that, like, I am so grateful to be here, to be alive, and to be existing. I'm grateful for my vehicle. I'm grateful for my consciousness. I'm grateful to be grateful. I mean, I think that we're on such a trip, you know? It's absolutely incredible to have the experiences that we experience. And, you know, what I always say, like, I'm so happy when I'm sad. Mm. A lot of people are upset about being sad. You know, it's like a double thing. They're like, they get depressed. They fall into depression. Why am I so sad? Why am I so angry? Like, oh, life will never change. But I have a lot of gratitude because I'm like, man, the fact that I'm sad means I know I deserve better. The fact that I'm sad means that I am viscerally reacting to the situation, knowing that I deserve a different situation, or that something should shift, or I'm reacting at all. Like, do you know how many people go through their life and they don't feel anything? And I'm feeling so much that liquid is pouring out of my eyes, like that my body is chemically without my like control, just reacting to it. It's so amazing. Like, I'm constantly amazed by, like, every experience that I have. I don't know. I mean, I just don't. This is why I can't, like, you know, smoke on the daily, because I'm, like, basically high all the time. I'm just, like, everything is amazing. Like, everything is just incredible. But it definitely frustrates partners and things, I'm sure, because it's just, like, they're like, you're so utopic. Like, why? Like, we're fighting right now. You're supposed to be, like, sad. You're supposed to be angry.
But isn't it so great that we're fighting? Because that means it's worth, there's something worth fighting for.
It's when somebody stops talking that there's a problem. Right. Well, it's when somebody stops feeling that there's a problem.
Uh-huh. And resentment, really. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that lingering feeling. And I think even resentment is okay, because resentment is meaning that we are constantly trying to resolve something. Mm. We're not just burying it and letting it go. Mm. Resentment means we're constantly replaying this thing, feeling this thing, we're feeling it all. And that's so fucking cool. Mm. You know?
So the problem in your idea is not feeling anything at all. That's the ultimate problem.
It's when you don't feel.
Can you teach somebody to feel?
I think that feeling is something that happens when you're honest with yourself. I think that feeling is something that is relative, because the extent of feeling is cannot be measured one human to another. Mm. You just know if you're purely existing to your fullest extent right now or not. Mm. And if you're purely existing 100% to your fullest extent right now, then everything that you're doing is 100% feeling. Yeah.
Okay. If you could give one message to the kids that are listening to this, not just kids, anybody. I use the word kids because, like, I think we're all kids, you know?
Yeah.
But, like who maybe just trying to figure it out, and, like, who don't really know how to trust themselves and to be unapologetically themselves and love themselves fully, like, what would your, like, one thing be?
I say the same thing in every interview, and I have to. I always tell people who are under the age of 18, especially in this country and hopefully around the world, it's pretty applicable. But you may be having a really hard time right now, and your time is under the authoritarian rule of parents, teachers, people in general who tell you how you should love, what you should wear, how you should be. But that time is limited. And you may feel like you want to just get out of here as soon as possible, but this time period in which you're under the authoritarian rule of other people, it is short, and it is coming to an end, and it, and your freedom happens the minute that you are emancipated by law. Mm. This means that the minute you're 18, there are other people out there who love you, who will love you, who can love you, and who do love you. And I'm one of them. I'm here right now, and you can come get me right now.
There's two of us here.
There's two of us here. Absolutely. Thank you for owning that. But you're not alone. And, you know, I used to spend a lot of time alone. I know what it feels like. I read a lot of books when I was a kid, and I know that every book, in order to make it interesting, the character has to go through some sort of conflict. And so many people don't get the opportunity to do that. And so they live their entire life without ever having a good story. But if you're experiencing conflict right now, you're just at the beginning of a really good book.
Yo. You are so amazing.
Thanks, friend.
One more question.
Love questions.
What is love?
I think that love is honesty. And I don't necessarily mean it in a spoken form. I just mean it's when you are honest with yourself and you act on that honesty.
I like that answer. It's like instinctual almost.
Instinct is definitely honesty. It's your like kick, like, you know?
Yeah, that's the gut honesty.
Yeah. And sometimes instincts can be wrong, right? Mm. But oftentimes they're pretty spot on.
You meditate?
I do meditate, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't meditate very often, though. A lot of people think that I'm like a weekly yoga person. And like, I mean, I only meditate like when it feels necessary to like sit with myself.
Yeah, you know? I think a daily practice for you would be like the ultimate medicine.
You think so?
Whole fucking galaxies with inside of your brain. Just throwing that out there. Rain Dove, I love you.
I love you too.
Like, this was like, we're real fucking friends. Like, this, there's no like, there's no bullshit here. Let's do some really cool shit together.
Sounds like a beautiful thing.
I'm here for you, straight up. Like, this show is here for you. I know you're working on a YouTube channel right now, trying to get those numbers up.
Yeah, we're almost at that 10,000.
We're almost at that 10. Where do we find you?
Well, you can go to my Instagram, Raindove Model. That is my most important platform right now. It's what pays all the bills, and it's also where I get to have my largest voice to share other people's perspectives as well as my own. Or if you go to Raindove on YouTube, you will find me. I am there chillaxing with my 3,000 subscribers working towards 10,000.
We're going to get to that 10, no problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, world, watch out for this one. Yo, Raindove, you are so fucking woke. Oh, God, you just blow my mind. If you guys want to know more about Raindove and support, check out her Instagram, her Twitter, her Facebook. It's at Raindove Model. That's at RAINDOVEMODEL. If you don't follow me already, fuck you. Just kidding. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Nico Tortorella. NicoTortorella. Hey, call somebody in your family. Call one of your friends. Call somebody that means something to you. Spread some love today, okay? I haven't said that in a long time, but just consciously think about who you want to spread some love to. Get on the phone and tell them that you love them. Just have a conversation. Maybe somebody you haven't talked to in a little bit. Spread some love. Look in the mirror. Tell yourself you're fucking beautiful. And then go tell somebody else that you love them. Let's get this love train started. I love you all. And if anyone's like bored in the New York area late at night and wants to, you know, get at it, hit me up in the DMs. Peace. This is the love bomb. We're about to explode. Nico.